Joining us now is the commissioner of the NHL, Gary Bettman. And Gary, just as we get started, it's Doug McLean with us here today, not Ron.
Oh, okay. I knew there was a difference between the two.
Yes.
I was going to bring Ron in for some help, but I thought I'd try to handle it myself.
You don't need any
help. I know you're excited about that.
No. You know, it's all good, and I think what most people tend to forget is it's a little bit of theatrics that goes on.
Yeah.
I think Ron and the CBC try to do these interviews to be as entertaining as possible. Whether or not people find them entertaining, I can't predict, but I go along with it because CBC is an important partner for the NHL.
So you have to know how I feel when I sit and talk to a guy for 20 minutes in a restaurant. I get up and leave, and he said, okay, Ron, good to see you.
I didn't know you were one to have an identity crisis.
Okay, let's get at it. I know I only have a limited amount of time to speak with you.
You have all the time you want.
So I'm speaking in Burlington, Ontario at a function tonight, and I just was, you know, I'm sure I'll be asked on the update, so I just wanted to make sure I've got it right from the horse's mouth. So I've heard the Quebec-Winnipeg conversation, and obviously as a Canadian and as a former NHLer, that excites me. I guess I have some questions about it, and I understand when you make the comment you'd like to fix what has happened in the past, but I guess the number one question would be, Gary, is Winnipeg and Quebec, are we sure, are we absolutely sure, because if it's going to be a relocation, which it potentially could be, are we confident that they're going to be money-making, revenue-generating teams in the whatever it takes to be successful, 85, 90 million revenue type team, so that they never need revenue sharing?
Versus
Southern Ontario that would be guaranteed that it wouldn't need revenue. When I hear Ottawa lost money this past year, which Eugene Melnyk said on this station, that makes me very nervous when I'm talking about a Winnipeg and a Quebec with their demographics and their corporate base and on. So just explain to me the sudden loyalty to those two cities versus Southern Ontario.
Well, first of all, you're assuming that the cities of Quebec City and Winnipeg might be handicapped and might not be able to support a franchise. We haven't fully studied it, mm-hmm. but based on the conversations that we've had with the people who are interested in owning franchises there, they're quite confident. Whether or not Southern Ontario could support a team, nobody's really in an in-depth way satisfied us, because there's been no reason to, as to the answer to that question. There's still the building issue there as well. And I think there's being way too much made of the whole thing. Now people say, whoa, what do you mean? You got to answer the questions. The fact of the matter is, we left Winnipeg and Quebec City not because there aren't passionate fans there. We wound up leaving because neither city had a new building or an adequate building, and there was no prospect of a new building, and neither city had anybody who wanted to own a team there. We're now potentially looking at a situation where in Winnipeg they have a new building and they have people that want to own the team. And in Quebec City, they have people that think they want to own the team, more than one group, I think, and there's discussion about building a new building. So if we can return to people that have embraced the game and have demonstrated a love for the game, it would be, I think, not right for us not to respond to that level of interest if and when we can.
But
and so if we have to move a club, then I think you look at dealing with situations that, from an equitable standpoint, enables you to try to do the right thing.
Yeah, and I understand that, but let's not kid ourselves. If it was known that, as it is in Winnipeg and Quebec, that Southern Ontario might be available, I think you would be able to find an adequate owner very easily. And I think if you looked at the demographics, you talk about the building in Hamilton not being adequate, but Quebec doesn't even have a building, and Winnipeg's is 15,000 seats.
Well, but two things. One, Quebec is talking about building a new building,
sure,
state-of-the-art building, and the fact that the building is 15,000, the old Boston Garden was about 15,000 for hockey, and you know, since you were general manager in this league, the revenue from your last 2,000 seats isn't going to make or break a club. In fact, I could argue the case that having a smaller, more intimate building may actually be better in some places. So, but you know, this whole conversation is all speculation. It's something that people need to be patient on. As I indicated last Friday in my media availability, I don't want to raise expectations. So ranking cities or saying which one's better, with all due respect, it's a debate that doesn't make a whole lot of sense for people to have right now. Ultimately, the Board of Governors will decide where it is they want to be and when. My own personal view is if something happened that was beyond your control, and now you can fix it, why not fix it?
Was I wrong to assume that you did do a ranking, that you did say Winnipeg and Quebec would be the first two that would be looked at ahead of Southern Ontario?
I said my personal preference would be if the opportunity presented itself,
okay,
that's where I think we should be focusing our attention first and foremost. That isn't set in concrete. I will acknowledge, though, that Winnipeg expressed a bona fide interest with real people to take a club immediately, if possible, understanding that that might not happen, that our preference would be not to relocate any franchises right now, and they're prepared to be patient. And I think with us, they've been engaging in a very sensible, professional, rational process.
Now, by the same token, if a team was in Southern Ontario and just for numbers' sake did 60% of the Leafs' revenue, they would be a profitable franchise year after year and would never need revenue sharing.
You don't know that. And it depends on other. This is getting silly. When you started in Columbus, okay, you know that the economics shifted because the team didn't have as much success as you would have liked. And so, you know, to point to Ottawa in a particular year and say they didn't make money, to suggest that a team might have 60% of another team's revenue, come on, now we're in the zone of making stuff up. I think we've really explored this topic sufficiently, and I'm happy to answer questions that are based on reality and fact, but now we're off into the ozone.
Oh, okay, so we're into the ozone. Just on the Dallas situation, there's a bankruptcy.
Maybe I am talking to the other McLean.
No, it's a bankruptcy situation with the baseball. That doesn't affect the Stars or won't prolong that sale. That sale will move along.
The two franchises, and what you're talking about is the Texas Rangers and the Dallas Stars.
Right.
They are on two completely different tracks. The Texas Rangers are in bankruptcy and are working towards a sale that some of the banks may or may not object to. We are working with the banks and are involved in a sale process that we hope will be concluded in the next few weeks or a couple of months to get the Dallas Stars sold.
Headshots, GM's made a decision to put in the 5-minute major. And game misconduct, major topic, major conversation. It'll obviously probably be passed by the competition and the Board of Governors.
There's still a little work to be done. The general managers concluded unanimously yesterday that the way we've defined the back pressure, lateral, blindside headshot from a shoulder, which historically would have been legal, should continue to be illegal, and that the rule change that we put into effect after the general manager's meeting made sense, was clearly definable, and addressed the problem. Although, if you recall, coming out of the general manager's meeting, what was determined was we weren't going to have the officials call this on the ice for the balance of the season. We didn't think we had the appropriate time and ability without training camp to get the players and the officials, most importantly, in a position to call it consistently. The view is, for next season, a minor penalty didn't make sense. We thought that it would be very, very hard to enforce. Terry Gregson, who's the chief of staff of officials, was at the meeting and didn't think that made sense. And B, everybody seemed to feel that there should be a major five in a game if it could be called appropriately. And before anybody does anything, Terry has to come up with what he'll be comfortable with is the standard that he can impart to the referees. That's something we will vet with the general managers, the competition committee, but we believe that as long as the officials can be gotten comfortable with what the standard is, that if you see a headshot that comes from an east-west hit, the lateral blindside hit, then it should be called.
Commissioner Gary Bettman on Hockey Central with R.J. Broadhead and Doug McLean. Just to flash back for a moment, we're talking about destinations for teams for relocation. How realistic is the possibility of teams relocating within the next season or two?
It's not something we're planning to do. And as I think everybody knows, we try to avoid franchise relocation. We avoided it in Ottawa and made that club healthy. We avoided it in Buffalo and Pittsburgh and made it healthy. When there was speculation and about Edmonton and even Calgary and even Vancouver having to move, we successfully addressed their issues and they haven't had to relocate. So we would prefer not to have any franchise relocations. We'd prefer to have 30 healthy franchises all where they're currently located. We think that's the right thing to do for your fans, not just in the cities you're talking about, but if you start giving messages to your fans wherever they are that you'll bail out on a city, you know, in the blink of an eye, that's a terrible message to be giving to your fans.
Now, you said you hadn't explored or don't know if Southern Ontario would be successful. It's speculated it would be, but are you exploring that opportunity as a potential place with meetings in the near future or anything?
No.
Gary, just going back to the headshots, I was sitting with Brad May watching the game last night, and we get into a discussion about hits from behind and the Ovechkin type, not just isolated hits, but the hits from behind in particular, where we had a lot of conversation this year. And we were sitting there trying to figure out when they really became an issue in the NHL. And I think back 10 years or 8 years, I don't recall them being a real part of the game, and neither could he. And he seemed to indicate to me that it seemed to just come in like the last 3 or 4 years that these blatant hits from behind and that are dealt with severely by you guys.
Actually, I respectfully disagree. We have hardly had any hits from behind in the last 3 or 4 years, and we went out of our way a number of years ago to make sure players understood that they would be punished severely from hits from behind. If you're referring to Ovechkin's push on Campbell...
No, I'm not referring to that. I'm referring to a number of hits that happened this year that were called, and guys were given two-game suspensions for, or one-game suspension, or 5 minutes for boarding.
Well, some of it's.
I mean, I watched one. I watched one the other night with Burrish, for instance. I mean, those. You know, we talked about those being the dirty type hits, and so yeah, there's been plenty of them this year. I've watched three or four games like you every night.
I think the Burrish hit was a 2-minute penalty. I mean, would people in the course of a game will do things that will be penalized? How about slashing? That was a major problem 5-6 years ago, and we were successful in reducing the incidence of slashing because we were seeing too many injuries on the hands and the wrists. So what happens is when you see something that's a potential problem or that's potentially dangerous, when you make clear what the standard is, the players and the officials are great at understanding what is allowable and what isn't allowable, and if we call it consistently, which we try to do, we were successful in getting certain types of conduct out of the game.
So you're comfortable with where the hits from behind are at this point?
Well, we don't see too many hits from behind. Again, I thought you were referring to Ovechkin, you know, his push on Campbell, which knocked him off balance.
Right. Yeah.
He wound up toe-picking and crashing into the boards, and Ovechkin got suspended for a couple of games,
right,
because it was deemed to be a reckless or careless play. It wasn't a hit from behind like Lemieux did in the finals against Draper.
Right.
You know, it wasn't anything like that, and you hardly see that anymore.
Yeah, well, you don't see them as severe as that, but you certainly see them.
Well, because what happens is when you make body contact, when you're at a couple of feet from the boards, there's that, as you know, there's that vulnerable place where you're not quite close enough to the boards and glass to brace yourself, and you're not far enough away that you can avoid them, and that's always right. The danger zone.
Right, and those are the ones I'm talking about, and yeah. I think, you know, we talked about them every two, 3 weeks this year, but, you know, we can respectfully agree to disagree on that. I, you know, just talking to a player last night watching the games, it was a major discussion point as to when those type of things really became the way to play the game along the wall. So, looking at the CBA coming up, Gary, we don't know whether they're going to elect. When is the date on the extension with the players?
I believe it's May 18th in 2011.
Okay. And then you move forward from there. Olympics final discussion, it will be part of the CBA, or will that be just a decision that you and the players will agree on?
Well, it's always historically been included in the CBA.
Right.
To the extent we've been going to the Olympics and that the players go to the World Championships. And whether or not it's part of the formal CBA negotiations or not, the fact is it's something that we need to decide jointly. It's an important decision both for the league and for the game of hockey, and perhaps as importantly for the players, obviously. And as it relates to the Olympics, there's no immediate time pressure on it. The Olympics are still almost 4 years away. The International Olympic Committee has yet to even figure out who its North American broadcasters will be. And so there's a lot of work to be done. The Olympics this year in Vancouver were spectacular. It couldn't have been any better from a North American perspective. Did that mean it was all good and it didn't have any negative impacts on our season? The answer is obviously no. So there's some good, there's some bad, and ultimately we in the Players Association are going to have to balance, you know, the good and the bad and figure out what makes sense. And being in a place, in a venue other than a North American venue, has some severe impacts. Obviously, travel is one, and the benefits you get is another, because the Sochi games, because of time zone differences, will be 8 hours ahead
right.
of the east coast of North America, which means the games will be on between 4 in the morning and, I guess, 2 in the afternoon, give or take. And I'm not so sure that some people will conclude that the exposure we'll get from those games will be worth the exposure we give up by shutting down for what will probably have to be more than 2 weeks to deal with the travel.
Finally, to end on a very positive note, although the Olympics certainly were, is a great game last night. Great to see the series extended. Great to see if it can go 6-7 games.
Real quick, exciting.
It is always interesting and exciting to see how the playoffs unfold. These playoffs from beginning to end have been unpredictable, and, you know, looking at Montreal's run, looking at the Flyers, how they got into the playoffs, and then how they beat the Bruins, history was made, to coin a phrase from the viral marketing campaign we're using. Looking at the turnaround for Chicago, I mean, you know, we were talking at the beginning about struggling franchises. You know, Chicago struggled as good as any franchise we'd ever seen up until about three, four years ago. I think 4 years ago, the Blackhawks were 29th in the league in attendance, and now they're leading the league. There's an ebb and flow to everything, and it's always better to look at things over time than take a snapshot. You know, in the 70 Stanley Cup Final Series plays since the best-of-seven format was implemented in 1939, only twice has each of the first four games been decided by one goal. This has been an incredibly competitive season, incredibly competitive and exciting and entertaining playoffs, and the Stanley Cup Finals unfolding the same way.
The playoffs have been exciting. The Stanley Cup has been exciting.
It'd be great to get a second team in Toronto so we'd have a real shot at the playoffs. Gary, thanks a million.
Wait a minute. It sounds like you're lobbying. Didn't you have a relationship with somebody who was trying to do that?
Exactly.
So maybe you're not the most objective person on this subject.
I think neither one of us are very objective on it at times. Thanks a lot.
By the way, whoa. That's not exactly a fair statement.
And neither was yours.
My responsibility is to represent this league and the owners and what their desires and wishes are.
Right.
You were looking for a job.
Exactly. Exactly. Is there anything wrong with that?
No.
Okay.
But at least you need to acknowledge where you're coming from.
Yeah. And you can acknowledge that I can give my opinion as well.
Absolutely.
As you can.
Of course.
Okay. Great talking to you.
Thanks for taking some time out.
Thanks, Gary.